This is Mises Weekends with your host, Jeff Deist.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to Mises Weekends. I know a lot of you already know our guest, Connor Boyack.
Thanks for having me.
Libertas in Utah. How are you?
Very well. Very excited to be here talking with you, Jeff.
Hey, you know, there's a new Tuttle Twins book out. That's what we're talking about. Before we get to that, can we mention that your organization was involved just a couple weeks ago in a medical marijuana initiative in the state of Utah? Please tell us about it.
So Libertas has been around for about 7 years now. I remember Ron Paul on the campaign would always say that, you know, people would come up to him and say, what should I do? And what, you know, and he would always say, I have no idea. Like, everyone has a different path. And this ended up being my path. And it's been fun, especially to talk to Dr. Paul recently. And he's like, Connor, I never would have told you to go start a think tank and change these laws and stuff. So we have a ton of fun. We're what's called a state-based think tank. And so where a lot of times we focus on federal issues, I feel like we can't have a very good impact. A lot of times it's very difficult to affect change there, but at a state and local level, it's actually really easy. So being a very libertarian group, we've changed about 30 plus laws in Utah, a lot of significant stuff, search and seizure and civil forfeiture and privacy surveillance, all sorts of stuff. And most recently, as you point out, we were behind the effort to legalize medical marijuana or cannabis in conservative Utah that no one thought we'd be able to get it done. So it's a ton of fun and very heartening to see conservatives especially come on board, and maybe some of the Bible Belt states will be tipping from here to follow the same path.
Are you finding that just some very average people, Mormons, are sympathetic to the plight of people with cancer or nausea or pain?
Yeah. I think generally speaking, people are sympathetic. The hard thing is kind of the reefer madness, you know, the fear that if we do this, teens will start increasing it and DUIs will increase. So I think the sympathy is there. I think a lot of people know, especially with like epilepsy and cancer, as you point out, that everyone knows somebody who could benefit. The hard part is assuaging those fears, especially for people who are inherently fearful. And very prone to fear. So I think the tricky thing for us was finding how to thread that needle and have a conversation in our state in a way that reassured them and helped them overcome those fears. And then the sympathy kind of kicked in and we got the vote.
Yeah. Well, your side project, of course, is the Tuttle Twins series. You've got a brand new book out called Fate of the Future. This is what, number 8 in the Tuttle Twins?
Number nine. Yeah.
Now, you base each book at least loosely around an existing book. This one, of course, is based around Murray Rothbard's Anatomy of the State. It's a pretty harsh book for adults when they first read Anatomy of the State, if they aren't sort of in tune with our way of thinking. Talk about how and why you chose Murray's book.
So we have a long list of books that you know, our readers have been suggesting, and so our potential list is pretty long. And Anatomy of the State has been on there for a little while that we've gotten suggestions to do. And we got to remember, or I not remember so much, but it's important for your audience to understand that the libertarians are kind of our core faithful few who are familiar with these works and, you know, have read the original books and want to pass those ideas on to their children or nieces or nephews. However, I'd say easily 80% of our audience at this point are not libertarian. They've never heard of Mises or Rothbard. They've never read Bastiat. They just heard in a homeschool group that these books teach important values to kids, or, you know, they heard from someone at church that, you know, this was great for their kids. Hey, you should check it out. So we find ourselves communicating with an entirely new audience who's not familiar with these original works. And that makes this book in particular that much harder, right? Because here we are communicating Rothbard. It's one thing to have an intra-libertarian debate about, you know, anarcho-capitalism, minarchism, all that. But when you're presenting someone entirely new to these ideas, the basic tenets of the state and voluntarism and so forth, it's a tall order. And so we tried to tread pretty lightly. This book ended up being a little bit stronger than past books because we feel the ideas are so compelling. But it's tough for us to find a way to kind of thread that needle and say, well, look, we can be strong and appeal to the libertarians, or we can be a little bit more gentle with these topics and broaden the funnel of people we're talking to and lead people into our movement. That's the one that we're trying to hit.
Connor, it's not like you pulled any punches in this book. I mean, you're using words like coercion and predatory and violence, words that Rothbard uses in Anatomy of the State, and you're presenting them to kids. What's the age group that the books are aimed at?
So intentionally, we're aiming at kids 5 to 10. What mm-hmm. we've found over the years that a lot of teens, the older siblings, will read these books because even though they're a bit juvenile in terms of their presentation mm-hmm. with all the colorful illustrations, the ideas are engaging. And this was never intentional, but it kind of spontaneously came about where easily a third of the parents we're finding are deviously or subtly learning themselves. They don't want to admit that they are like learning from a kid's book, but they find this joint learning opportunity where they're learning alongside their children. So we position the books with simple stories and fun, you know, stories for the little kids. It's kind of like watching Simpsons or Shrek, right? Where mm-hmm. the little kids kind of, it's slap happy humor and it's fun, but the adults, they resonate with it as well. That's the angle that we're trying to achieve.
Well, I think they're fantastic. And we shouldn't kid ourselves. A lot of adults aren't familiar with Bastiat, don't know Rothbard, Mises, don't know Ron Paul necessarily much. So if they learn of these things through their kids, all the better.
Yeah, exactly. When you have kids start asking their parents, like, why is taxation theft? that really makes the parents start to be like, wait a minute, what? What do I need to think about and to be able to converse with my 7-year-old now?
Well, I know I've struggled with this a little bit as a parent. Is there an argument for allowing kids to keep their illusions for a while? A lot of what the Tuttle Twins is about is demystifying the state and state mm. action. But we've got Santa Claus, we've got the Easter Bunny. Should we let kids believe in government for a while when they're little?
Let me flip that question a little bit, Jeff. I really appreciate the question because it's something as a parent I've thought a lot about as well. I wonder if it's more like helping reaffirm what children are taught ever since they're young. Mm-hmm. Since kids are little, we say, don't hurt other people, don't steal their stuff, you know, respect boundaries, be kind. And in a way, I think our books are reaffirming not only for those kids, but then the older kids and the adults that, yeah, society teaches us all these exceptions to those rules, right? If it's the state, mm-hmm. it's okay. Or if it's big groups of people, you don't have to follow those rules. If anything, I feel like in a way we're reaffirming that those principles that almost universally we teach to our children are enduring principles. They're not exceptional. They're not time limited, age limited. So in a way, I think rather than demystifying or talking to kids about these adult things, I think we're saying, hey, kids, these principles your parents are teaching you actually apply to the bigger world around you, and here's how. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are parents or would be parents someday. So let's just talk a little bit about how we've done it. My kids are a little older now, but when they were younger, they would come to me with a question about politics or government. And here's what I'd say. I'd say, look, I have very strong opinions or feelings about this. Here's what I think. But as you get older, as you develop, as you become an adult, you may have very different thoughts and opinions. And that's okay. It won't make me think any different of you or love you any less. In other words, I'm trying not to be dogmatic because I don't want my kids to rebel against me by being a statist.
Sure.
So how do you think about, you know, your presentation with young people in terms of dogmatism?
So this may be an awkward example, but it's the one that comes to mind. Imagine a parent of young children wanting to have the birds and the bees conversation with their mm-hmm. child. They don't want that child learning about the birds and bees on the street, right, or on the internet. They want to have a sincere conversation in a safe environment and say, like, look, this is what we think is right. You're going to hear a lot of competing ideas as you get older, mm-hmm. but like this, these are our values and this is what we think is proper. Many parents struggle with that conversation, and there are many, many popular books that make it very easy to talk to your child about those ideas through a story that you jointly read together, kind of introducing a third party into the conversation a little mm-hmm. bit that's trusted and sometimes fun and so forth. That's how I feel we're doing it here. We're not propagandizing children so much as we're enabling parents to have conversations about serious ideas. To say, look, you're going to learn a lot of competing ideas as you grow up in the world around you. We think it's important to transmit these ideas to you. And now we have a resource that's going to help us have those conversations. Just yesterday, we got a message from one of our readers who talked about how with his son, he felt that our books helped his conversations with his son, quote, level up, in the sense that around the dinner table, they can talk about some really engaging ideas because there's context for the child. The dad can say, hey, do you remember when you read about in the Tuttle Twins and the Food Truck Fiasco about protectionism and how the government was trying to stop this business from succeeding. Well, guess what? Our Airbnb is getting shut down by the city because the hotels are trying to come after us and they're using their connections in the city. It makes more sense to the child because they have that story to fall back on, and the parent can use that reference point kind of as a foundation as they go on through the years. Now that we've been doing this 4 years, we've accumulated all sorts of stories where the parents are able to kind of point back to the books as a way to have that conversation with their children. I think that's the most valuable thing, is just the reference material for parents to be able to contextualize what's happening in the world around them in a way that benefits their children.
Well, and let's face it, even if they're homeschooled in their younger years, they're getting bombarded with the fantasy camp version of government is benign. I mean, this is balance, needed balance.
Yeah. For all the accusations of propaganda on our side, where are those accusations on the pro-state side? Like, I don't even know if we're balanced, because we're like so small compared to the apparatus of propaganda that's conveying the other point of view. If anything, I think we need more of what the Tuttle Twins is doing. We need competition. We need other people writing books for kids as well.
Well, I wonder if you have, or if many of our listeners have actually looked at kids' textbooks in public schools. They're horrible.
I'm glad you asked that. I've been contemplating doing a video with my kids. So if you go to our Tuttle Twins Facebook page, at the top, you'll see a pinned post with my children, who are kind of our little kid actors for the books. And the videos have accumulated millions of views and done really well. One of the videos I want to do is featuring some of the material. I've actually gone on eBay and I bought some of these books you mentioned, Jeff. And I have highlights and sticky notes. One in particular I remember was talking all about how wonderful the government is because it solves problems. And look at pollution, and look at poor people, and look at hungry people. And the government is so great because it helps people. And of course, they're explaining this very simply at like a eight-year-old level. But those messages start to resonate with kids and they stick there. And if they're not, if there's no competition, if we're not in there kind of clarifying or contextualizing that, it is propaganda because they're not explaining any alternative point of view.
But this is revolutionary, what you're doing with these books. Do you get attacked for them?
You know, from time to time, not that bad. Like, I remember when our book on Atlas Shrugged came out, that's probably the biggest attack we got. I remember Salon wrote an article attacking us.
Oh, no.
It was great for the attention, right? It helped sell a lot of books. It's like whenever there's gun control measures or Democrats win an election, the gun stores sell out because everyone's so worried. It's good for business. So it's been good for business when we get attacked. We don't get attacked a lot. I think some of our books are positioned as kind of apolitical. Mm-hmm. Take, for example, the iPencil, which we turned into the Tuttle Twins and the Miraculous Pencil, talking all about spontaneous order and social harmony cooperation. That's a book where we've spread tens of thousands of that copies of that book into schools, directly into classrooms around the country. And there hasn't been really pushback because it's not perceived to be political, even though, I mean, as you and I might understand, politics and economics, it's really kind of human interaction just in different spheres. So we try and kind of outwardly position ourselves in a more appealing way and not say, hey, we're, you know, libertarian propaganda for kids. We market it a bit more softly, again, to kind of broaden that audience a little bit. And maybe for that reason, we're not getting a ton of pushback. But frankly, I would invite more pushback because we'd love to sell a few more copies of the book.
Well, now, think out loud, you have an Atlas Shrugged book. You have an iPencil book by Leonard Reed. You have a book based on the law by Bastiat. I think you have a Jekyll Island Fed book as well, correct?
We do, yeah. We have The Creature from Jekyll Island. We have Economics in One Lesson.
That's right. Okay.
Let's see, The Road to Serfdom. We have Dr. Kirsner's book, Competition and Entrepreneurship. That was our eighth book that came out a few months ago, all about entrepreneurship. And then I think we have A Foreign Policy of Freedom by Ron Paul. The collection of his speeches. That was a very meaningful one for me because after the way I got into this movement, I love this question, right? Because we all kind of came in at different times and levels. For me, it was, I was invited to a screening of Aaron Rousseau's documentary called America Freedom to Fascism. And I'm sitting in this little library room with people I don't know. I can't even remember how I heard about it. And there was this guy that just made a lot of sense. You know, who is this guy? And it was Ron Paul. That was my first experience learning about him. I purchased this book, A Foreign Policy of Freedom, which was the collection of his congressional speeches pertaining to foreign policy and non-interventionism. And as I recall, I think I took that like on my honeymoon as my reading material right when I was getting married, because so, you know, awakening for me to you know, embrace and understand this point of view that just clicked with me. And so when we did that as a Tuttle Twins book, all about the non-aggression principle, and it was very fun to honor, you know, Dr. Paul, who I credit with bringing me into this movement. So we're having a ton of fun. We have many more books, obviously, that we can do. Initially, we had kind of planned to do 8 to 10 books, but at this point, I think there's just so much demand for new material. We're just going to keep it going.
Well, let me just interject that Daniel McAdams and I edited Ron's speeches, which became A Foreign Policy of Freedom. And I remember that editing process very viscerally. It was not a fun book to edit because it was literally his 4 speeches as transcribed by the House clerk with the ums and all that in it. So I'm close to that book. You know, I want to ask you, there's a big nexus between these books and homeschooling generally.
Yeah.
Does it ever shock you that we've been able to get away with homeschooling this long, that it's not attacked more vigorously?
I actually interviewed for our podcast, Society and the State, pretty recently, a couple who went to Sweden and talking about their homeschooling fight. They went up to Sweden's highest court in Sweden a few years ago. They changed their country's law to say that, you know, with very rare exceptions, nobody can homeschool, and they almost never give out those exceptions anymore. So this family was talking to me about the plight that they found themselves in, people fleeing the country just because they didn't want their children being fed into this state apparatus, literally a propaganda and culturization. And it was actually very awakening. Your question is very on my mind because of that conversation as a homeschooling father myself. To realize how fortunate we are. I'm very critical of how many of our freedoms are being violated. Taxes are high, wars and everything else. But as a parent, I actually would agree with kind of your question in the sense that I'm amazed that we get away with this.
Right.
And I'm amazed that the state, for all its strength and power, maybe it's that they feel like they're so big that they don't mind a little bit of competition because they know that they're still going to win and, you know, they have all the momentum and money and power and so forth. Maybe there's a little bit of that in play. Nonetheless, I'm thankful for it because I know just a few decades ago in America, the homeschooling laws were generally awful, and it was kind of around the 80s that things improved. And I see for my own children a night and day difference of how it would be for them in public school or how it was for me. So yeah, I'm glad we're getting away with it because we have a wonderful time. And these books are huge in the homeschooling community because I think homeschooling families are always on the hunt for curriculum, right? They're always out there trying to find good material. It's not like there's an off-the-shelf solution for all homeschoolers. I think homeschoolers are more independent-minded by virtue of that decision that they've made. And so all of that kind of clicks together, which works really well in our favor to introduce this material to those types of families.
And if we're willing to take a long-term view of things, homeschooling might be the most radical, revolutionary, libertarian, activist approach of all. I mean, it might be better than a million white papers or a million candidates in an election or a million third-party votes.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's that's how we perceive our project. Even if we're getting to kids who are in school, we position this to those parents of public school kids to say, look, your kids aren't getting a balanced education. Make sure in the home you're supplementing with these types of ideas. But I agree, it's very radical to be spreading anarcho-capitalism to six-year-olds. I mean, you can't really call it anything else other than radical at the end of the day to be introducing an entirely new generation. I always think about like who's the next Lou Rockwell? Who's the next Ron Paul? Who's the next Jeff Dice for that sake? Like, or Connor Boyack? Who's out there that if we didn't reach out to them now at a young age, we wouldn't get them for like, you know, 50 years before something else happened in their life. How amazing is the world going to be because we're planting all these seeds? Yeah, a lot of them aren't going to grow, but a lot of them are. And I get very excited in working on this project, fantasizing in a way about a future in which we have all these people who better understand these ideas. We'll never be a majority. I don't think we're going to have this reawakening of classical liberalism throughout society like the founding era necessarily. But I think the critical mass is important, even of a minority, and I think projects like this can help.
But it's interesting, if you look at just about all the murderous or dictatorial regimes in human history, they've all understood how important it is to get kids away from family influences and toward thinking in terms of themselves as a cog in something bigger, and that bigger thing is the state.
I agree. There's a great quote I'm not going to be able to repeat, but the gist of it is that the family is the best line of defense between the individual and the state. And again, like, I feel that as a dad, I worry that a lot of parents like me are not equipped to talk about these ideas. When we do little focus groups or try and study our market a little bit and have these conversations, we find that even the adults who've maybe read The Law by Bastiat, let's use that as an example just because it's so popular, they feel inadequate in being able to explain that to another adult. And then when we say, well, how would you talk about it to your child? Just blank stares. Like, how do you even distill that down? And so my goal, my quest in all of this project is to facilitate those conversations so that that line of defense between the individual and the state can actually be somewhat adequate, you know, be able to mount some sort of defense. But if I think a lot of parents don't even realize that we're in a battle for the hearts and minds of the rising generation, that there are people out there who recognize that this is war, quote unquote. And for folks like us, like, how are you going to win a war that you don't even know is being waged? How are you going to prevail in a conflict that you don't even understand is happening all around you? And so kind of my sinister goal, if I had one with this project, is to spread these ideas to so many families so that they're having these conversations, understanding this material, you know, over the weeks and months. I don't think it's just that you sit down and read it and a light bulb clicks on, but maybe something on the news happens 4 months later and you know, your 11-year-old is like, hey, that's just like in this book. And those connections are made, and it's going to help them later in life. I think it's immeasurable, a lot of the stuff we're doing. I think it takes a while to manifest itself, but where that family should be that line of defense, I feel like our movement, if you want to call it that, we wait for people to become adults, right? Like we like your organization, mine, Libertas, we're often talking to voters, we're talking to adults who can read these big, thick books. And I was working on the Tuttle Twins over the years, I've come to the realization that we have a profound lack of investment in the rising generation. We wait for public schools to propagandize and plant all these biases that we have to then overcome. Or we hope that homeschoolers are going to do okay on their own without equipping them with resources to kind of help. So my wish is that we, as kind of a movement, so-called, can recognize the importance of investing in the rising generation. I'm not here to say that Tuttle Twins is the only project. Mm-hmm. I think we need more effort. I know Ron Paul's got his Ron Paul curriculum. You know, I think the earlier we can invest some of our resources and attention, the better off we'll be in the future.
Well, I want to finish with this. First, the book is dedicated to Lou Rockwell. So yes. Just tell us why.
Lou Rockwell's website was very helpful for me in learning. Once I kind of learned about Ron Paul, I immediately found LRC. And reading all those essays was very, very helpful for me. That's how I found out about Rothbard. And then, of course, learning about the Mises Institute and all the work that Lou has done to spread those ideas. And so we wanted to honor him as an individual for me personally, but also for the movement and doing such an effective job at spreading these ideas so that they don't fade away into some library, but that they're, a reawakening of sorts and making sure that new generations are learning about Rothbard's work.
Well, and I don't want to conclude without mentioning the illustrations, which I think are fantastic. Elijah Stanfield is sort of your partner in crime in drawing this. I think they're every bit as important as the text.
Oh, yeah. The stories would be one thing, like if all I did were write some little stories. But, you know, when you have entire illustrations that can visually convey the ideas that we're doing and talk about these concepts, he makes these stories come alive in a way I never, never would be able to. He does not get enough credit for these books. He does such an amazing job. And of all the applause that we get and the praise that we get, it's like 80% easily for how amazing the illustrations are.
Well, before we finish, how can people keep track of what you're doing? what Libertas is up to.
So TuttleTwins.com is okay. where you can find out about the books. For those who don't have them and want to get, we do like a combo pack where you can get the books and the workbooks. And then if you want to learn a little bit about our work in Utah, we do work with some partner organizations in other states as well. Although we are just focused on Utah, our website is libertasutah.org. Or another handy website, because a lot of your listeners are spread out throughout the country, there's a group called the State Policy Network, which is spn.org. And that's where you can find groups like mine, but in the state wherever you're at. So different kind of free market, libertarian, conservative type groups who are trying to increase freedom in your state, spn.org would be a great resource to check out.
Well, Connor, thanks for your time. Congratulations on another book. You can find it, ladies and gentlemen, in our bookstore at Mises.org. I think you can find them on Amazon as well.
Yep. And yep. Go buy them on the Mises bookstore.
We really appreciate what you're doing, and we look forward to keeping an eye on you and your organization.
Thanks as always, Jeff.
Thanks, and ladies and gentlemen, have a great weekend.
Subscribe to Mises Weekends via iTunes U, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, or listen on Mises.org and YouTube.